Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, March 11th. And guys, we have comics.
Oh my God.
I mean, this is, again, for the customers, this was pretty much invisible, but we were about ready to take our own lives.
Yeah, this would have been the third week of delayed comics, which, you know, for me means, you know, making two trips to UPS each week, which is kind of a long trip. And then at least one of those trips being a disappointment and a go-home trip.
Yep.
And then we had to have the crazy Wednesday pulls, which makes us all insane.
Yeah, because we have to pull what we do in about 5 hours in 1 hour.
Yeah, and it's worked out. We've done it enough that it went well, but we were on the verge of cracking.
Yeah.
And then we actually got our books this week. I was so happy when I went to UPS and they're like, we have all your things.
That's right. And so we will have a full comics talk this week. It also means we will skip most of last week, although we'll give a quick mention. And actually, Nick's pick is from last week. So
That's a cheater pick, Nick.
That's not a cheater pick. I'm just recognizing that last week had a book that's better than all the stuff that's from this week.
Whoa.
But before we get to that, we got a lot of house cleaning to do. As always, this is the recording.
The house cleaning or housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
It's housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
I think,
No, I have house cleaning.
Never say house cleaning again.
Dave, we don't conform in this house cleaning.
I actually have house cleaning to do too. So.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
But that's not really for the podcast, I guess. So tonight is our reading with Rogues. We're going to be doing Astro City. As you hear this, that is over. I'm assuming it went well.
Yep.
Or that we're all dead by each other's hands.
That's a little dark.
London Jacquard death grip.
Yep. So we're going to be talking about mostly next month's stuff. But before that comes, next week, Monday, March 16th, we have our Ticket to Ride Gaming with Rogues over at BJ's Brewhouse. Sunday, March 22nd, we have our Magic the Gathering Dragons of Tarkir pre-release, which is the pre-release for the next Magic set. We do those every 3 months or so when a new set comes out. Saturday, March 28th, around 2 p.m., there's going to be a pre-release demo of a game called Double Vision. That is a board game that sort of combines Red Dragon Inn and Cards Against Humanity a little bit. It's basically a game of going out drinking on New Year's Eve, and you have to do like bar tricks and answer trivia questions and keep your characters drinking. And it's a fun game. I played a little quick demo of it. The creator is going to be here demoing the game before in advance of its release later this year. And that'll be a fun demo.
And the game looks really slick.
It does.
So
these are all up on our Facebook and our webpage. Then we're getting into April stuff. Saturday, April 11th is Tabletop Day, the international celebration of board games, and we have a ton of stuff lined up for that day.
Yeah, was that all basically kicked off by Felicia Day through and her friends and stuff?
Will Wheaton's site, yeah.
Through Will Wheaton,
yeah.
Which is part of Felicia Day's bigger Geek and Sundry site. Right?
Yeah, I think Will Wheaton is sort of the spearhead of Tabletop.
It makes sense. That makes sense.
But yeah.
It's pretty damn cool.
It is really cool. And this is the fourth year doing it. Third year.
I was looking at the game lineup and I really like it. There's
yeah.
Cool stuff.
We buy a kit that's got extra stuff in it as we got some stuff to give away. And we based our demo library on that. So we're going to have demos of the Star Wars X-Wing Minis game, Sheriff of Nottingham.
What's the Meeple City?
Terror and Meeple City.
There's a bunch of good ones. I should have it right in front of me.
And Love Letter Batman.
Love Letter Batman.
So lots of fun stuff. You can see the full schedule up on our website and on our Facebook page. And come out. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Then later in April, Monday, April 13th is our Ladies' Night. We've talked about that before. And Tuesday, April 14th is our next Reading with Rogues, which we are going to be doing Birthright, the new Image Fantasy comic.
Yep.
That had its trade paperback come out last week.
Yeah, kind of an urban fantasy sort
of thing. It's a modern day guy who comes from a fantasy world back to our world, and there's some twists and turns. It's got great art.
Yeah, we all like it.
We've talked about it before on the podcast. That's going to be our Reading with Rogues for next month. But for this month, there was a whole lot of news.
Yeah.
For example, the Supergirl costume was revealed.
Right. That was like just in the last week or so, I guess.
This is the CBS pilot they're doing.
Right. Is it just a pilot right now?
Just a pilot, but there's almost no way it's not going to go to series.
So costume was designed by the same lady who did
Flash and Arrow,
and I really liked it.
I like it, but I have issues with the red tights.
Oh, really?
It's a little weird. I mean, I understand.
Well, let's just quick say what it is. It's a pretty traditional costume.
Very much so.
She's got the, what, like, sort of the blue top, the red skirt.
Yep.
She's got the red boots that are kind of taller than they used to be.
Yeah, they're tall boots.
And she has, like, red tights, so she's a little less scantily clad.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's red. It was a little hard to tell.
Yeah, they're sort of red leggings. Yeah. And I get it because, yeah, the whole joke about flying around in a skirt that makes sense.
Right.
But it just looks a little weird to me. I'm sure I'll get used to it.
See, I actually didn't even notice it at first. I just thought that was, like, flesh tones in shadow.
Yeah.
And she's also got the traditional red cape. The one thing, it does look very sort of Man of Steel, the Superman.
It's a little
movie.
Darker.
It's a little darker. There's a slight texture to it, you know, that what I can only describe as basketball texture.
Yeah.
That a lot of superhero costumes have these days.
I mean, she's just strapped basketballs on.
Yes. Just ripped basketballs. But I really liked it. I thought it was a good mix. It was mainly old school, but with, you know, enough newness to it. Nick, where do you land before we...
No, I thought it was a great design. I have no problem with the leggings. It makes perfect sense.
You're not freaking out about him the way Randy is freaking out like a baby.
And the color palette, while it is a little darker, I mean, so is the flashes and so is arrows.
This is what I was sort of saying when I posted about it on Facebook. It is a little darker, but it's kind of the same darker hues we're used to from all the movies.
Yeah, it's all a piece with Arrow and Flash.
Even Captain America, who's had some pretty great movie costumes, they've all been a little bit muted too.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to have seen a little bit brighter. I think that fans would not have, like, hissed and run from them or anything. But to me, it looks good. Yeah. Randy hates the leggings.
I just think the leggings look a little weird. I actually really like the costume.
I don't know, like, who the big people on the show are, like, if it's going to be any good.
Well, it's still Greg Berlanti and some of those guys are still running it.
They're developing it for CBS?
Yeah.
How are they developing it for another network?
Networks don't always own their own content.
Oh, okay. So, I don't know how this stuff works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm excited for the show. I think
I'm looking forward to it.
I saw some people wondering, you know, it's like, well, you know, she's got a, I don't want to say a convoluted backstory, but she's the cousin to Superman.
Yeah.
Usually arrives after Superman, kind of traditionally. I don't know quite how they're going to doctor it up, but I have a feeling they'll have a pretty decent game plan to make it stand alone.
The costume in itself, am I wrong in saying that it sort of was reminiscent of what, when Peter David was writing it?
No, it's very wrong. And I do think they're going to be
taking a fairly traditional look, yeah.
They're going to be taking their cues from Peter David's run, which also was super convoluted. He had magic and...
Is that known, by the way, to be the case?
Well, the Danvers, I mean, that was her name originally, but I think that his was sort of a down-to-earth different take that was very divorced from Superman.
Well, you know, originally, when that began, she was like she wasn't even from...
No, she was an alien.
She was an alien shape changer who had assumed that form for some weird reason.
No, I don't think the backstory stuff, like, I don't think it's going to be involved in magic.
But they're
going to
take, like, the family dynamic.
But I think they're going to take the family dynamic and her being sort of a little more down-to-earth and that kind of stuff. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we may have said this on last podcast, but I kind of want them to put that trade back out.
Do the collections just like they have, like, She-Hulk when they started doing the epic collections and that kind of stuff. The Gotham City Sirens they've started doing.
Right. They've put out some Spectre volumes when Gotham was Gotham by Midnight? Gotham After Midnight? Whatever that series
Gotham
is.
At Midnight.
Gotham at Midnight.
Yep.
Yeah, Spectre stuff came out around then.
And also Gotham Central, now that Gotham is pretty popular.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see some of that stuff.
I would guess, yeah.
I remember reading, I didn't have all that run, but I had a vast majority of it, and I remember really, really enjoying it.
You know what they should have done is they should have done 70 Supergirl with a headband. Oh, yeah.
Also, in the TV vein, we had an announcement about Walking Dead's companion series, the one set in L.A., that I think is sort of a prequel, sort of. It's like during the initial outbreak,
something? Yeah. Because I don't know anything about
this. I think that's true. I'm not positive because I'm also trying to stay a little out of the loop. But
Is it called Walking Dead Sister Series, or does it have a name? It
doesn't have a name yet. It's Walking Dead Companion Series. It's got a great cast, and it's set in L.A., and AMC just gave it a two-season order.
Okay.
Well. No shocker. It's doing so well for them.
Here's my question. Do you think it can sustain? I mean,
yeah.
What can it bring to the table that the main Walking Dead series can't?
It can bring 16 more weeks of or 13 more weeks of Walking Dead. Because basically they can film it, and then when Walking Dead ends, instead of having a big 8 months break that everybody complains about, they can put another Walking Dead series on.
Okay. I wonder if they might also have an angle like, There will be a possibility. These guys will be pursuing a cure. These guys are gonna, you know. I mean, do we know if they're characters spinning off of the?
They're new characters. I think.
Okay.
I don't think they're gonna mess with the formula much because that's what this is. Walking Dead, and I believe it is gonna be a group of survivors. In the early days, like, that'll be the big difference. It's like...
Right, if there's, like, lots of sort of people still around, you know, as when you look at Walking Dead, like, cities are more or less abandoned.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been killed.
Because how long was it when Rick woke up from his coma? It was
like 9 months or something. I don't remember exactly.
So basically, we'll see what happened in that 9 month span, probably. Right.
But I believe that...
I think, wasn't it only a couple months? Even on, like, an IV drip, I don't think you can go 9 months.
I don't know, maybe it was a couple months. Well, no, he'd been in a coma for a while.
Yeah.
So I think he was in a coma before all.
Oh, right. Like, before, like, the hospital fell and all of that stuff.
I don't know exactly. Someone will correct us on that.
No, that might be right.
But at any rate, I feel like basically what AMC wants out of this is more Walking Dead.
Right.
Yeah. And that's all they need. And I do think it's sustainable.
Now, I do imagine that, you know, they will come up with sort of a fairly different dynamics to their group. There's going to be a bunch of hippies. but yeah, when you think about it, just about, of all the different types that could be thrown into survivor groups, I'll give them this, you know, you could get some very different types.
Yeah. I agree.
So then there's a, also in TV mode, Nick reminds me that the first episode of Powers is up on the PlayStation Network. Yep. I have not watched it yet. I will probably be watching it for my TV podcast this week, so I will check in and report back.
I'm curious, the main actor, which I...
Charlton Copley?
There you go, because I was going to butcher
Who played Chappie in the new movie Chappie, who was in District 9, who was in...
He's basically in all of Neil Blomkamp's movies.
Yeah.
He's usually really good in whatever role he is in. So.
I mean, I don't know if we really ever talked about this show, but if for people who haven't seen it, it's from a comic by Brian Bendis that was originally from Image.
Originally from Image, yeah.
Migrated to Marvel.
And it's still at Marvel at their Icon line.
Still at Marvel through their Icon line. But yeah, it was about a couple of cops working super-powered cases and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It grew from there. There was lots of backstory, you know, like... One of the cops himself had been a superhero at one point, but it was a very R-rated, very Bendis-y book with lots of cop talk, interrogations,
right.
Interesting spins on powers, and how it is certain levels of superhero realism. I have definitely enjoyed it at times, but I kind of burned out on it a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm not, like, all pumped for this show, but I'll be curious to see what people say.
Yeah, I'm mildly curious, and I have PlayStation Network, so I'll give it a shot.
Yep.
All right, so turning to the internet, as we often do, Patton Oswalt was on, Screen Gems or Screen Trailers or something, one of these movie sites.
Yeah, nobody cares about what that site was.
And
the content is all that matters.
He talked to them about his idea for Unbreakable sequels.
Incidentally, before we mention what he said, am I correct that this looks like an ongoing series where they're going to do more of these?
I think, no, they have done these before. This is all a thing they've done.
Oh, okay.
Like, not with Patton Oswalt, but right, this is a running thing they do.
Is it celebrities?
No. Okay. It's just their guys.
I gotcha.
They're like...
Sequels to movies that don't have sequels.
Yeah.
So if I wanted to, like, I know that they're working on it, but if I was like, oh, I've got the perfect idea for five more Blade Runner movies, I'd pitch it.
Right.
And so that's what Patton Oswalt did with M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable.
Yep, and I've always felt like that could use a sequel, honestly. Yeah.
I believe it. I thought I remember hearing it was conceived as such.
That's what I thought so, too, and I guess Shyamalan moved on to other stuff that everyone hates.
Right. He also fell out of favor, so probably if it was ever... He might have been thinking, oh, I'll come back to that in a few years. And then in a few years, everybody hated him.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you've seen Patton Oswalt do this kind of thing on Parks and Rec and where he did his big Star Wars Marvel filibuster. And he does sort of good geek runners. And this was really fun.
Yeah. His ideas were serious.
But
it was delivered kind of with entertaining Patton Oswalt style.
Yeah. And they actually cut together a trailer using footage from various Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis movies. Yeah. And
essentially, he had some clever notions in it to spin off of little background elements of the first movie where is it spoil?
No, it's not spoil. You can spoil Unbreakable.
Yeah, Samuel Jackson's character, who proves to be a villain in the end, that he had caused all these accidents to try and find other people who are unbreakable, like Bruce Willis. And that there was this suggestion from some of the clippings on his wall that indeed there might be other ones out there. And so the second movie was, what, Unbreakables or something
yep,
like that?
Yep, and then Broken.
And then Broken, yeah. And indeed where Mr. Glass, Samuel Jackson, yep. I think, what, did he try...
Was, he's still trying to take the powers through transfusion,
and
yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny, it all sounds a little silly, but as explained by Patton Oswalt, there, you know, within the sort of contextual style of the movies, I thought that it could work.
Yeah, I think it could too. I thought it was a... It was a cute little fan trailer, and Patton Oswalt was funny. Go seek it out. Just Patton Oswalt Unbreakable. You'll find it.
It's a good 10 minutes of entertainment.
Yeah. And then there was also an announcement about there being an all-dude Ghostbusters or something like that.
Yes.
Which is weird. It's weird that they're undercutting their all-female Ghostbusters by doing this, I think.
So what I felt is that I see what they're doing. I believe that it was not an intent to undercut.
No.
I think they're like, we've got something for everyone.
Yeah.
Because, like, the sort of the second part of the announcement that's probably actually more important is that they're going to try and do a Ghostbusters cinematic universe, at least somewhat mirroring what Marvel has done. Which probably means, like, two or three different variant franchises that
Is there any world in which this is a good idea?
You know,
so we're going to have the all-female Ghostbusters, the all-male Ghostbusters, and then a solo Slimer movie?
An all-dog Ghostbusters?
Maybe so. You know, here's the thing. I remember reading that, what the producers were saying was that it's, and I guess they're working with, who produced the original ones? Ivan Reitman?
Yeah.
He's still alive?
I don't know.
I think they were talking with him and talking about how it was actually closer to the original conception, which was they did have a notion for this to be a mega franchise.
Yeah.
And of course there was lots of crazy stuff. There was going to be time travel. There was going to be lots of giant ghosts like the
right.
Stay Puft Marshmallow
right.
guy.
Right.
But I gather at least it was somewhat in the cards, and I don't know if it's well done.
I don't know. I
don't feel like
I understand.
Marvel gets to hold a lock on the idea of a cinematic universe, but it is going to be hard to pull off.
They don't, but Marvel has so many different properties, as does DC.
Right.
Like,
how much ghostbusting are you going to really need in your life?
I mean, if they wanted to, say, make a Blade Runner, Aliens, Terminator, Ghost Cinematic Universe, like all of that, a cinematic universe where all that stuff links up, that makes sense to me. Ghostbusters seems very specific to me to be a cinematic universe.
Well, it seems that way, but they may expand the notion. You know, we think Ghostbusters, they run around, they trap ghosts, and have adventures. But they may be getting more into, like, the sort of mythology of it all. There may be sort of ghostbusting stuff that is not just them running around and trapping ghosts.
I guess. All I can think when I see this is some studio executive looked at all Marvel's movies and how much money they were making, like, what do we have?
Well, I was talking about this with Nick this morning, that other people have started trying for these cinematic universes.
Yeah.
And the first one out, although I've heard it's a fun enough movie, that, was it Dracula?
Oh,
Dracula
right.
Untold.
Yeah.
Untold. Ended up is sort of like the was meant to kick off a Universal Monsters cinematic universe, so there
right.
would be a, like a Wolfman one and a Creature from the Black Lagoon
right.
one and all this, and so they could eventually cross over and have team ups.
I actually watched that movie this weekend. It wasn't that bad.
I honestly feel like did you
feel, Nick, it was the start of
was it like when you watched Iron Man?
No.
But to be fair, they also prior to that they had what, Hulk? And was there another one?
No, those weren't prior to that. Those were after. Iron Man was the first Marvel cinematic.
But they didn't like... Wait, did Iron Man end with a...
Iron Man ended with the Sam Jackson teaser. Iron Man was the beginning of the cinematic universe.
You're part of the bigger universe.
Yep.
I thought that that Marvel had had something prior to that.
Nope. Spider-Man had come out. X-Men had come out. But Iron Man was the first Marvel movie.
Had his flop Hulk. Okay.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing, is that the reason the Marvel Cinematic Universe launches so strong is because it has a really good movie that nobody's seen like that before.
Right.
But I also think Marvel and DC are really the only people who could pull off a cinematic universe. Like, that's part of the deal, is that people want to see a shared universe because
right.
they're used to a shared universe concept. Like, if they did a wild card shared universe, because that was a shared universe, you can't take what is not a shared universe and make it a shared universe.
Right.
I feel like that's hard
to
do.
They haven't told you yet is this going to be crossing over with Ninja Turtles and
see now that you could do a shared universe movie.
And so the X-Files.
That could be a cinematic universe.
Yeah, there's take certain, what IDW has
there's
done.
Certain concepts that have already expanded quite a bit. Star Wars is another one.
Yeah,
obviously
Star Wars you could do a cinematic universe with. Yeah.
So yeah, it seems weird, but I don't know. It may be meant to be scale, you know, I don't know that a shared universe necessarily means Marvel scale.
Yeah.
It may mean that they do a few movies that are linked.
Yeah. I am skeptical about this movie, but I've liked Channing Tatum and stuff, and,
Somebody else was good in it, right?
Did they already announce who they were? I mean, I knew they announced, the Russo brothers.
No, all they announced was Chang Tung and Russo brothers. The Russo brothers actually is part of what upsets me about it, because I don't want those guys going over and doing lame Ghostbuster movies when they could be doing more cool Marvel movies.
Well, I think it's – I don't think they're leaving Marvel for any reason, because
there were rumors that they might be going to DC.
Really?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what. I mean,
weren't they sort of already confirmed for doing, like, Avengers?
They're basically confirmed for Avengers, yeah. But and Captain America Civil War. But once that's all done, I guess they may be leaving. But that's okay. You know, Whedon only stick around for a few years anyway. So
that'll be four movies for them.
Hey, who was the guy who made the Ghostbusters turn off their trap?
Walter Peck.
He needs a movie? Come on, Randy. Walter Peck the movie?
He's had great movies.
But not as Walter Peck.
No, yeah, I'm saying Walter that Peck. Character. What about a Stay Puft movie? Just nothing but Stay Puffed.
An entire Rick Moranis movie?
Terror Dogs, the movie.
Wasn't his name Tully?
Yeah, Louis Tully. Louis Tully, Two-Fisted Accountant.
Yep. Sigourney Weaver, Sexy Red Dress movie.
Yeah.
It could be a Janine and Louis Tully, team-up.
Team-up movie?
Yeah. Lost Tales of the Librarian Who Sees a Ghost.
It may not be a good idea.
Wait a minute. The Tales of the Twinkie.
What about the guy who was getting the little electroshocks from Bill Murray at the beginning?
Yeah, let's,
that guy's got a story to tell.
What if he gets powers and goes and fights ghosts?
Because of that, his brain has changed and he's now got mental powers.
What if Ghostbusters is taking place within the Marvel Cinematic Universe and they just merge them? Iron Man just joins.
Yeah, Iron Man just...
Let me tell you about the Ghostbusters initiative, Iron Man.
I'm afraid of no ghosts. Alright, so that's... Call us, Hollywood.
We've got ideas.
Hulk smash puny ghosts.
We had another bit of Secret Wars knowledge dropped on us with Marvel having their Old West book.
Yeah, this was just sort of one more title, but it looked kind of particularly cool, I thought.
Yeah.
The Onion AV Club did a few clips of art from it, like some of the covers and some interior art.
Man, that art looks great.
I still don't know quite what the premise is, other than there's like some section of the Secret Wars universe.
It's Jerry Duggan has been doing Deadpool, and it is, yeah, a section of the Marvel Universe where it's the Old West, and so
there's like an Old West... Captain America.
Their Iron Man is like a blacksmith.
Right. And I assume that he's not literally Captain America, but he's probably like a marshal.
Yeah. And their Tony Stark is a guy who sells like elixirs and is a snake oil salesman.
Or not Tony Stark, but that's the
Bruce Banner.
Yeah, yeah. Which I assume is kind of a Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing. Yeah. Like probably one of his elixirs made him the Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be fun. It looks really good. There was like Dave said, it was on the AV Club. They had a write up of it.
And the covers are beautiful. Evan Shaner's
doing the art, that's right.
I don't want to say underappreciated artist, but he's kind of underexposed as talented as he is.
Well, he's one of those guys who sort of does a lot of specials and like one shot.
He's about to break out big because he's doing the Convergent Shazam, which he should always have been doing Shazam.
Yeah.
And then he's going to do this Marvel Western thing, and I think he's going to be getting a big book next year.
I hope so.
He likes big books and he cannot lie.
I like big books. Finally, an update on our trailer blockade.
Oh, right. This is our ongoing goal to watch fewer trailers and be more surprised.
Yeah, at the have less movies. Less spoilers. And
but I like trailer blockade as the term.
It's going better than I thought. I was sure that people were going to spoil me accidentally or on purpose, and that has not happened.
IO9 has spoiled a few things for me here.
I have mostly remained unspoiled.
But you must have looked this.
Facebook.
The things
sometimes
things pop
I can't
up.
Scroll
yeah.
fast enough.
I know a couple of guest actors, but I have not watched any Avengers trailers since the first one.
Same here.
I think we were watching. My wife and I were watching something on television, and it came up as
the TV trailer.
And now
yeah.
look for yep. our extended look at the Avengers trailer, and I just fast forwarded. And she's like, "What if I wanted to see it?" And I was like, "Too bad.
You have to watch it later. You're in the trailer. You married in the trailer blockade.
Yeah. So the trailer blockade is going to cause marital strife.
And then there was this week the second trailer drop for Tomorrowland.
Now, which people are saying it's a really good trailer.
They say it's really good. Now, I've only seen the teaser for Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
But that was enough. That, knowing it's Brad Bird, was enough for me to know, I want to see this movie. So I'm going to not watch that trailer.
Well, teaser trailer, I have no idea what
it's about. And that's great.
I'm excited. When I go into Avengers in, a few weeks from now?
Yeah, about end of April.
Yeah. I'm going to know very little other than Ultron is in it.
Yep.
And I remember from that first trailer seeing the Hulkbuster armor.
Yeah.
I know some of the characters in it, but I don't know what the plot's going to be.
Oh, anything, yeah.
I don't know what the big cool scenes are that probably everybody has at this point glimpsed at least chunks of on the trailers.
Yep.
So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I am very much looking forward to it. That's kind of how I went in the original Avengers, too, so...
Yeah. Honestly, it's been a long time since... I don't know that I've since we entered the internet era, I don't know if there's any blockbuster type movie I've gone into this unaware of it.
I think the last one I can think of is I went into Cabin in the Woods without knowing anything. I saw no trailers. I
heard nothing. I was completely unspoiled on Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah,
that was great.
I kind of avoided that too. You know, I take that back. I had watched that trailer a few times. I knew there was going to be some sort of metafiction level.
Oh, okay. See, I knew nothing. I knew was everybody said it was good, and it was like Whedon and Drew Goddard.
I didn't necessarily know meta, but I knew, you know, at least there was a humorous bent that it was going to be like Scream. And so I assumed
you could guess that with Whedon.
I knew nothing. All I knew is people said it was a good movie, and that it was Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon. That is all I knew.
You know, the best movies I went into knowing zero about was the original Matrix.
Oh yeah.
And from the trailers, I thought that it was sort of like, you know how in Blade, how he was doing some kind of superhero-y stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And clearly beyond human strength, he was leaping around and striking that cool pose that since then everybody else has done, including the Matrix.
Yep.
From the trailers, I was like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
They're teasing this, you know, no one can be told what the Matrix is, and they literally did not tell you what it was in the trailers.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just like the next sort of, I was interested to see it as the next evolution of superhero special effects.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I did see, it looked like there was maybe even a little bit larger level than Blade. Maybe this is what's going to pave the way for the next generation of superhero movies, which it was, as it happens.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what was cool about it.
Yeah.
And so, I went and saw that with my roommate, like, you know, way back when, and was pretty blown away by
it. That was a good one. That was the marketing of that was based on that, the curiosity of it. Also, Daredevil's coming up in a couple weeks, and I've only seen that first trailer once, so I don't really know what's going on in Daredevil either.
I've cheated on Daredevil.
I was calling you both out.
But I'm not embarrassed by it, because my notion is that I'll watch trailers for things that I'm on the fence on.
Well, and here's also the thing. We saw a minute and 45-second trailer today, or maybe it was even 2 minutes.
For 13
and it
hours.
Was for a mostly mood piece stuff.
For a 13-hour thing? I still don't know exactly what happens.
Right, no.
Yeah.
There were snippets of dialogue, but it was all things like, you know, it's like, I'm not sure if I can do this anymore. What's going on in this city? The vague sort of comments that I'm like, I don't know what it all means together.
I think what Dave and I were trying to figure out was sort of mood and sort of, you know, feel of it.
Right.
And it definitely is dark.
Yep.
But, you know. We'll see. I'm excited. I know nothing about it.
So. I am cautiously pessimistic.
Yeah, I get the sense that you're not as looking. Yeah. But you're locked in at least starting the marathon with us until you get tired of it and leave.
I'll see you at the end of episode two. I'm gone.
Yep.
It's my birthday. You will not move.
Damn it. I didn't know there was a loophole here. Wait, your birthday's the next day.
Yeah, but then that's
No.
It's a tabletop day. You can't do anything up there. You're not even going to be here.
There's something else I was going to say about Daredevil. Now it has left my mind.
All right. So
it's back. I think the weird thing is it seems regressive to me, that tone, because I've just enjoyed 3 years of not that tone.
Yeah. No, I get that. I have the same worries.
And I also. Well,
it's not to say that Mark Waid's run hasn't been dark, because there's been a lot of dark.
No, but it's been superhero, and this does not look superhero. This looks crime.
Right. That I'll share with.
I like crime, and I'm okay with it, but this does seem to be a different change in tone.
Well, you know what's interesting? And so here's what makes me a little nervous. I hate to even evoke it, but it reminds me a little bit of the Ben Affleck movie. Like, visually, like, kind of, and that seriousness that they tried to project around it. See, Miller's stuff, like, that kicked off Crime Daredevil in the 80s and revamped it, it had still some of the adventure elements, but it almost felt more, like, hard-boiled. And I don't know if this feels, it just feels kind of gloomy to
me. This actually feels more like the Bendis stuff to me.
Right, I think
that's
right.
The vibe they're going for, sort of the Bendis Brubaker crime.
I like
Daredevil.
The Bendis stuff, but
and I do too, and that's the hope I hold out.
I think until I see it in action, I'm still not going to quite be able to conceive of it.
Yeah,
so.
You will see this even less time than
Avengers.
Avengers.
Yep. So. Yeah, I'm definitely curious about it. It's
I mean, just based on Marvel's track record, I feel like I should have confidence in it. But but
you never know. There's always going to be the possibility of being a flop.
Colossal stinkfish.
They're also the thing that makes me nervous is it looks more like DC stuff.
Right.
Very grim and dark and that kind of stuff. Right. But we'll see. That may work just fine for this. Maybe. They have so many good people working on this that I can't see it being a flop.
You don't think Pa Kent's going to get caught, jump into a tornado?
during Daredevil, that'd be weird. All right, so we'll be back in just a second with our reader question of the week. All right, you guys have been keeping us in questions, which we appreciate. We even have a backlog of like one extra question in reserve. So keep sending those questions in. You can send them to roguegallerytx@gmail.com. We would love to get your questions. And if you are here in the store, or really, if you're in Austin, you come to the store, we will give you a free pack of comics.
You'll get a sweet, sweet comic badge.
Yep, we've given those to our last couple people. This time, this person didn't give me a real name. I've just got their email name. I don't know if you are out there, if you are in Austin. If you are, drop me a line and we'll get you a comic back. So the question this week comes from TBAC.
Okay.
Who says, long-time listener, first-time emailer. My question to you is...
Maybe his name is Tabak.
Could be Tabak. He's from a Star Trek episode?
No, he's a tobacco representative.
My question to you is... Guilty pleasures. You have them. You're ashamed of liking them. Those ridiculous comics, movies, TV shows, books, video games, board games. Now you must tell us about them. What's the comic book, movie, TV show, game, video or board, etc. that you're embarrassed to admit you love and possibly enjoy in secret when no one else is watching? So, first
that's
of all...
That's a broad spectrum of entertainment choices.
It is. But first of all, I want to say, I don't have guilty pleasures. I have things that I know I should be ashamed of,
yeah.
But I'm not. I'm too old to worry about that kind of thing.
Anytime Guilty Pleasures comes up, I sort of see this discussion take place, and I agree with it for the most part, but I also, because I sort of feel everybody knows what people mean when they say Guilty Pleasures, that it's still a convenient term.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, I want to get that out there front. The stuff I'm talking about, I'm not, like, ashamed about it, or I wouldn't be talking about it on the podcast.
I have no guilty pleasure. Everything I watch is awesome.
My guilty pleasure is strangling hobos.
Nick, your guilty pleasure is Nick Cage.
All of our guilty pleasure is Nick Cage.
Which are awesome. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're actually going to go to the Draft House and see and go watch Face Off, because Face Off's a great guilty pleasure movie.
We saw that was running immediately, formed a group.
It was like 10 minutes later.
And exchanged a bunch of awesomely cheesy Nicolas Cage images and GIFs and
that
stuff.
Ended with him photoshopped onto a cat?
Onto a cat, yeah. His crazed face photoshopped onto a cat.
Okay.
Hey, it exists. I'm staring at a picture with his hair as a bird. You know?
Yeah, but that's so true. We were... I think my guilty pleasure that you guys point out, the first one you guys point out, is female pop singers. I have a weird fondness for... I like a pretty wide spectrum of music, but I really do like legitimately, like Katy Perry and the Taylor Swift "Shake It Off" is really catchy.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm trying to think who else is
I'm
on
sure
my
you've got
on
a
my list. Britney Spears, "Toxic," I really love.
Yeah, you know. So I'm going to segue from this. "Toxic," I remember we enjoyed singing on karaoke like 10 years ago or something like that, and was really fun. One of the things I picked up from doing the various karaoke games and singing actual karaoke, is that even songs that I used to kind of discount in my snarky teens and 20s and 30s.
And 40s?
I realized how fun they could be sometimes in karaoke, or how there would be, like, you know, a nice pop craft to them that I hadn't really given them credit before.
Yeah.
For. And so I turned around a little bit on some of that stuff. There is, I mean, you know... I drove back from the coast with some my sister and my niece, who great niece, who's listened to. They just listened to like a top 40 station, and I did almost die there.
It was really, sure, that's
it was
a little
a lot
rough.
Of pop.
Yeah,
I was listening to a lot of Robin Thicke's "Blurred Lines," but there was a lot of Pink and a lot of
Katy Perry, Taylor
Swift. Some of it I was like, okay, but by the third time I'd heard it, I was ready to put a bullet in my
brain.
Yeah,
that makes sense, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Dave, you have a particular guilty pleasure?
I've made a list.
Oh, you have a list.
Yes.
All right.
I tried to cover some stuff, but I think my foremost one, other than maybe my music one, is sort of cheesy soft rock.
Yeah.
And that's more of a just something I grew up with, so it's like just burned into my soul as like, the first album I ever listened to was, like, the greatest hits of Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
We've often discussed Hall & Oates here at this store.
Hall & Oates is a guilty pleasure of mine as well.
I believe everybody kind of likes me.
I may have used it as an outro at my wedding.
That's true. That's true. And you know what I find? I find, like, most people when I talk about it actually like them.
Yeah.
So I don't feel particularly guilty about it anymore either.
Well, what's funny, Dave, is the soft rock thing sort of became a hipster thing all of a sudden with Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's true.
Like, all that stuff is on the soundtrack. Like, yeah, that's stuff that you grew up with. Yeah, there's some
very stuff in there. But yeah, my mom was listening to, like, Magic 95, and that was, like, the music of my childhood. And so I can try and listen to harder stuff, and I like a huge variety of stuff. I mean, we've got rap on our store Spotify. Yep. But I'll always have a soft spot. But what I was going to say is cheesy fantasy crap.
Yeah.
I like good fantasy stuff, you know, from Lord of the Rings to Ursula Le Guin's books to ElfQuest and comics, things I think are really genuinely great.
Yep.
But I also will enjoy schlocky stuff like the Spartacus TV show.
Sure.
Legend of the Seeker. stuff that's almost like really what I would say, yeah, stuff that's kind of for kids.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy it. it goes back to I think I imprinted on Kroll.
Yeah,
back in the 80s.
Yeah,
and that's another cheesy movie I like. I legitimately think is actually pretty good, even though it has a lot of kind of schlock and formula in it. It's got the Liam Neesons.
Right.
It's got an amazing score by James Horner.
Yep.
It's got a giant shuriken in it, and it's got bad guys who have spears, but spears that shoot lasers.
Yes.
Come on, give it up.
Yep. Nick. I know one of the guilty pleasures we all share is 80s action movies.
That's not a guilty pleasure.
That is.
No, but like the 80s action movie, that was like a pinnacle. RoboCop, Untouchables, Die Hard.
I'm not talking about those. Oh. I'm talking about the ones you may not share this. I'm going to say me and Nick. Yeah. Tango and Cash, Commando. I'm guessing you probably have a fondness for, was it? Ultimate Soldier, what was that one called?
Universal Soldier.
Universal Soldier.
Yeah, I like that one.
So
those ones are a little lower on my list, but there are some that definitely make the cut for me.
Like I will watch some cheesy 80s action movies.
Highlander, that's true.
Highlander. No, yeah.
Highlander is like the ultimate.
But Highlander is a cult classic at this point, that's I think.
True. I think my guilty pleasure is just I relish in bad movies.
Yeah.
And that comes from, you know, me running a video store for 10 years and I got to watch everything for free and I watched everything. and I continue to watch just kind of cheesy stuff. I mean, like but I said,
I know your taste, Nick, and you watch like everything though. So you'll watch like really good movies.
Yeah.
You'll watch stuff that's middle of the road, and you will enjoy cheesy movies.
I mean, like over the weekend, I watched the Dracula Untold movie. I watched
Jesus Christ.
I watched Ouija. I mean, Ouija was awful.
That was a bad movie.
It was just so bad. But then I watched like the Box Trolls, which I loved.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just I have a fondness for stupid movies like The Replacements and Necessary Roughness, and I just those are the two that popped in my head. Yep. They were both football.
Yep.
Come on, it's Sinbad and Keanu Reeves.
Sure. what about comic book guilty pleasures for you guys?
Comic book guilty pleasures.
I don't know. I mean,
there's probably some stuff.
Oh, you know, I did write down something. This isn't quite. Maybe when I was trying to get it first, but sometimes I have a guilty pleasure for what I would say is licensed comics.
Yeah.
Stuff that I don't think are great, but although some of these were, but like, for instance, when they were doing Warhammer 40K comics,
yeah,
I really enjoyed
them. Those were really well done, actually.
I really enjoyed some Star Wars comics, you know, like Aliens, Predator, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really follow the Aliens, Predator, I suppose, but there are times when licensed comics are surprisingly enjoyable to me.
Yeah.
Batman versus Predator.
Some of us here might...
The Star Trek Doctor Who thing I really enjoy.
What about Star Trek X-Men?
Not so good.
Some of us here really like Sleepwalker.
That's not guilty pleasure. That's just a legitimate
That's
love
just
for 90s,
Randy. In the 90s, everything was
He's
a guilty
showing
pleasure.
Up in Fantastic Four right now. It's cool.
I have one of my guilty pleasure books. I don't know if this is guilty pleasure or cult, but I really liked the Marvel UK stuff. And then they did that.
That's a little more cultish.
And then, but then they did the new the revamp one, and I wasn't as into it.
No, it was a little kind of dull. Honestly.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. It's like I think my license fondness might go back to the 80s when I read stuff like ROM and Micronauts.
Yeah,
but honestly, those were both by Bill Mantlow, who was really giving it his all to make those legit comics and not just crappy toy comics.
Yeah, those are great comics.
Same as G.I. Joe.
I was going to say
they're more or less. I consider all of those books to be on par with the Marvel books that were coming out simultaneous to them.
I mean, I guess...
Maybe not quite at the heights of some of those, but...
I mean, Marvel Comics Transformers at that time, I guess you could say those are guilty pleasures.
That's a slightly lower end.
Because they were not great.
No, but like they're solid. They've got their moments.
And then when Simon Furman came on, you could say it got better because he was definitely more of a storyteller.
I feel like I have some better Guilty Pleasure comic stuff. I'm trying.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Thinking of like Guilty Pleasure comics.
Yeah.
Well, you know, really... like I don't know. Does anybody read like I don't know? I want to say Magdalena or no. Anything like that. We need. No. We need our former staffer Dan here.
He has a lot of Guilty Pleasure comics.
Some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I was going to say for video games? You mentioned video games.
Yeah.
Most of the games I like are pretty mainstreamish games. But occasionally I'll get something schlocky that I enjoy for the property. So, yeah. Like, the biggest one I can think of is that Watchmen.
I knew that's where you were going.
Yeah. I was like, yep, know where you're going with that
I'm
one.
Like, there is nothing more antithetical to the greatness of that graphic novel than a beat-em-up game. Where you have, like, Night Owl and Rorschach running around beating people up. It's really repetitive. But the graphics were good
on
it.
I'm really playing some of it with you at your place.
And, like, every once in like, I feel like once or every year or two, I actually break that thing out and go around and beat some people. I still like it.
All right. That's a pretty wide swath of our guilty pleasures. Thanks for the question, TBAC, or Tabac.
Legion of Superheroes guy.
Again, send us your questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. And we'll be back in just a second to talk about this week's comics. All right, we are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, March 11th. But before we do that, we're going to talk about comics for the week of Wednesday, March 4th, real quick.
Retro flashback.
Yes, not all of them, but we real quick want to mention the Alex Native Volume 2 trade paperback came out, which we all really liked that book.
Yeah, especially I know that like a lot of people, it seems like almost everybody who went and came and talked about it with us for Reading with Rogues a few weeks ago, they all had a good time.
That was one of the books that we've picked that everybody seemed to like,
So there's a second volume, everybody.
We also mentioned already, Birthright Volume 1 is out this week. It's one of Image's $10 trades, I think, right?
Yeah, it is.
And then Princess Leia number 1, the latest Star Wars book, with Mark Waid writing and Terry Dodson on art.
Yep.
And that was a lot of fun.
It was.
I liked that a lot. And doing some of the similar stuff that Brian Wood was doing in his Star Wars book with sort of what does it mean to be a princess when you've just lost your world and that kind of thing.
It was interesting to see that it's also a different approach, though. There's another character in there who's like an
Alderaanian.
Expatriate.
Yeah.
Alderaanian.
Well,
yeah.
She's an X-Men fighter.
Right? Yeah. And she's a fighter pilot, yeah.
Right. But she's like a sort of a heavy loyalist to the monarchy.
Yeah. But she doesn't necessarily – I think she's sort of seeing Princess Leia as sort of the Princess Di type. She's like, you don't represent – she's loyal to the crown, but she's a little skeptical of Princess Leia as the last representative of it.
Right. So it's a different dynamic than Brian Wood had.
Yeah.
He's going a similar – kickoff, which is a how do you deal with losing your planet, but a pretty different execution, and it looks like she will be an interesting supporting character.
I liked it a lot, and I'm definitely looking forward to more. And there was also a really fantastic Deathstroke action figure based on the Arrow show, and it was a great figure, and we're out of it right now, but there should be more coming in tomorrow, so as you listen to this, it should be winging its way to Austin. It might even be here when you come in.
Very strong design.
So there's more stuff, and we may talk about that in future weeks when we get back to it. But before we do that, Nick has his pick for this week, and this is a really good week, from last week.
Yes, because this is better than everything you guys can talk about.
That's crazy.
Yeah, go ahead with your cheater pick, Nick. I hope you enjoy your cheater pick.
I enjoyed it so much. No, this
actually, it was very good.
This is Spider-Woman number 5. On the front cover, it is a new costume and a new status quo.
Yep.
And honestly, this is Spider-Woman in her new costume. It's more sort of a down-to-earth, not unlike what Batgirl's costume is.
Yeah.
But
a little more spy-y.
Yeah, and well, this is her sort of taking it back to the streets. She no longer wants to be an Avenger. She no longer wants to work for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Did she say... I know that they talk about this in the thing, but did she say why she left the Avengers specifically?
She didn't want to be fighting cosmic monsters and stuff all the time.
I mean, if you remember, I mean, Spider-Woman was replaced by a
Skrull.
A Skrull.
Okay.
She's been dealt with Hydra all her life.
Right, so she's sort of like, that's too much craziness.
She's just tired of the crazy, and she wants to get sort of back to the small-time crime.
Right.
So she is back...
you're taking down small-time crime.
Yeah. Yes, no, she's back to, you know
committing small petty thefts.
Exactly. Stopping petty theft. And really just helping the guy on the street.
Well, one of the things I liked about it is she's like, she literally kind of wants to go out there and plant a knuckle sandwich in people's face.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's
she wants to start a fight club.
I can sort of appreciate the... This is one of those sort of cathartic things about superhero comics, I think, sometimes, is that notion of that you can punch your problems away.
Yeah.
Well, and in a lot of ways, she's having a hard time finding her feet back into what it once was, because she's not a detective anymore. She's not a, you know, a secret agent or anything. She's just trying to be, you know, a superhero.
Sort of a street-level superhero.
Street-level superhero. And she's really having a hard, rough time of it.
Right,
because
like she's in a... The guy in and outright says she's bad at her. She's out of practice.
She's out of practice, and that's sort of the best way of saying it. She is out of practice.
So she's bringing people down, taking down the bad guys, but causing property damage, inadvertently,
inadvertently,
screwing up with police operations.
Yeah, it's just very cool. And there's just a lot of great character work, how she interacts with her universe and the people who populate it. There's especially a character I love that I'm very happy to see, and I don't think it's a huge spoiler.
I think we can say who it is.
Ben Urich is one of my all-time favorite characters. I guess that's because of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Anybody's read Daredevil? That was, he's been in Spider-Man and some other stuff, too, but Daredevil is where Frank Miller made him a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, but seeing him interact and sort of be... Because isn't he now, like, the head of the Daily Bugle?
I think that's gone. He was the head of the Pulse.
Well, we see the Daily Bugle in here, but
it's shown.
But it definitely looks like it's a shell of its former self,
right?
Yeah.
But it's sort of everything in this book is sort of back to basics in a lot of ways.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we're talking about how she's kind of having a tough time dealing with the street crime.
Yeah.
A little early on, I was like, "Oh, are they going to kind of undercut the character in her first issue?" It seems like they're, you know, she is stopping the bad guys, but she's kind of screwing up, too. And I'm like, it'd be kind of a shame if that's her first issue.
Yeah.
But instead, they use that as a springboard to establish a new status quo,
yeah,
which I don't think we want to give away.
No, but it's a good one.
But it does have something to do with Ben Urich. And their interaction is really interesting.
There is a fun jail scene in here that actually cracked me up because of the sort of antics going on in the cell.
Yeah.
Which I won't spoil. Another thing I guess I really loved was the art.
Who is the artist on this?
Well, the writer is Dennis Hopeless, so there's that. And then the art is by Javier Rodriguez.
Who's a guy I don't know. She's done other stuff, but I don't remember him.
I recognize the name, but I can't pin it.
This opening sequence is all in the rain is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, just... It's, you know, the measure of an artist is sometimes known by how they handle rain or snow.
Yeah.
And... There's just, it's beautiful.
But there's also great motion, like her sense of, when you see her fighting, the poses are really good. There's some great camera angles. It's a really well done art.
Who's the old Fallen Angel artist who does Captain Marvel now?
David Lopez.
He reminds me a little of David Lopez.
Yeah,
style.
I can see that.
See, David Lopez mixed with a little bit of Marcos Martin.
Yeah.
And his facial designs are good, too. There's even a little, I don't know, Kevin Maguire or something sometimes.
It's just very clean, very approachable. It's very just sort of... Everything about it kind of makes you look at it and pay attention to it. It draws the eye.
And this is also this is number five, but this is really number one.
Yeah, I mean,
you could skip the previous four issues, which I liked, but they're all Spider-Verse. This is a new story.
It was part of that big crossover Spider-Man had, and this is all Jessica Drew. Really effectively a number one.
I feel like anyone who's reading Spider-Gwen and Silk should also be reading Spider-Woman. Or Batgirl. Honestly, you should read all four of those books.
Yeah, you should.
If you're reading one of them, you will probably like all four of those.
And as much as I love the old Spider-Woman design, I mean, the one that's lasted forever.
Yeah, me too.
This is a great redesign of the costume.
Yeah.
I am excited to see where the story goes.
Yep.
You know, I noticed that when she was fighting and stuff, they had her doing lots of cool moves, which I think sometimes people forget to do, just her gymnastics, her wall sticking.
Yeah.
She doesn't have web shooters like Spider-Man.
She's got Venom Blasts.
But she has Venom Blasts, which they also did some cool stuff with. I think sometimes writers, in a way, they get a little bit into the characters' heads and they're good at the drama, but they sometimes forget the old-fashioned, it's cool to see a superhero use their powers, flex their muscles. Well, and they seem to remember that.
Sort of like the way Samnee handles Daredevil in the book.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you get to see that motion and see the gymnastics and the acrobatics that it, you know, takes.
This is very much of a piece with the Daredevil book. It's got that similar vibe.
I'd say it could function as a sort of sister series.
Yeah.
And like I said, I loved it. I thought out of all of the sort of Spider books, it was my favorite.
Like the new ones that have been relaunching?
Silk and Spider-Gwen in this one.
It's a really good first issue. Yeah. Moving back to this week, though, Dave, what do you got for us this week?
So this is one from Image that was a... I didn't know really anything about it other than vaguely remembering it from when we ordered it.
Yeah.
A science fiction book from Image called Southern Cross.
Yep.
It's, I don't know, 100 or 200 years in the future. It's future, but not far. I don't know. It might be far-flung future. There's colonies.
There's colonies and space travel.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And there's like even like a warp drive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is with a story by Becky Cloonan, who I know primarily as an artist.
Yep.
And art by Andy Bellinger or yeah. Bellinger.
I don't yeah, know how Bellinger. You
say it. Bellinger. Who I don't know who he is, but his art has something in common with hers.
Yeah.
So if you know Becky Cloonan's artwork, you're not going to be completely.
It's a similar vibe. Yeah.
It has a.
Who's doing the colors?
Let's see, Lee Loughridge.
Oh man, Lee Loughridge is one of the best colors in the business.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a so this is a shipboard first issue. I don't know where it's going to
be. Yeah, we don't know where it's going, but
and that's that mystery is sort of one of the things I like about it.
Yeah,
our lead is a young woman who's she kind of almost looks like you know like a backpacker.
Yeah,
she's on her way to the moon Titan.
She's got a decade old armed robbery charge on her.
Right, so she's got sort of something of a mysterious past going on there. And or not armed robbery, but assault and battery.
Assault and battery, right?
Yep. Let's get the charges right.
Sure,
right.
You're right.
Court of law.
Sorry.
And her sister apparently lived and worked on Titan, and she's and has died, and she is going to collect her remains
and maybe look into what happened.
Maybe look into what happened. And what we're getting in this this issue is her interactions mostly with the crew. With her bunkmate
yep.
In there. And it's hard to pin her down. She's kind of antisocial.
Yeah.
She sort of doesn't like being around people. She doesn't seem like a bad person.
No, she just kind of is. She's a little misanthropic.
Yeah. I don't know quite how to describe it. There's a lot of walkthrough of the ship. You feel. I thought it was interesting that the ship itself is almost a character.
Yeah, very much so.
It's a presence.
Yeah.
You are like it's like walking through the decks of you know a submarine or a yeah. battle or more like a battle.
I was thinking cruise ship like Titanic basically.
Yeah, yeah. Or don't you think also like an aircraft carrier?
But like an aircraft carrier, yeah. But it's civilian occupied.
In fact, when they showed it, it reminded me of the ship in Aliens, the
yeah.
Sulaco.
Yeah, yeah.
But also a little bit of space cruiser Yamato. You know, the Star Blazers.
It looks like a big oil tanker to me.
Yeah.
And the ship is named Southern Cross, right? That's where
the name comes from. Yeah. And, like, everything in it looks sort of lived in, worn,
yeah.
rusty. Everybody's kind of a little bit dingy.
This is definitely the sort of Aliens method of travel.
Yeah,
like, this
exactly.
definitely feels like people work here. Like, the place they're going is a moon of Venus, is that right?
Titan is a moon of Saturn.
And it's been colonized as a, like, mining colony.
Right.
So it's like a bunch of roughneckers on board and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of characters, a lot of intro, but...
Yeah, I'm assuming that, and there's certain little bits of intrigue related to one of the characters that on board is, like, going to be doing the inquest
yeah.
or whatever related to her sister's death. Right now, it's mostly kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
I can't pin down where it's going, but I like the first issue. I'm intrigued. The artwork is beautiful.
Yeah.
It has that sort of lived-in look that a lot of Paul Pope's comics do.
Yeah.
Like, the art style isn't exactly like his, but the same way his buildings and cities and stuff look very lived-in, this place looks lived-in. So I am on board to check more of it out. And if you're looking for something that's a little bit of a different kind of sci-fi, not full-on action sci-fi, but more of a... drama, suspense, sci-fi. Definitely give it a look.
Yeah.
What you got, Randy?
I got Howard the Duck number one, which I've been looking forward to this book. It's written by Chip Zdarsky, who you may know as the artist of Sex Criminals and the writer of such things as Monster Cops and Letters to Applebee's on Facebook. And artist by Joe Quinones, who has mostly done DC stuff like Green Lantern and West End Comics.
Wednesday Comics, yeah.
And I've been looking forward to it with sort of a nervous eye, like, I hope this doesn't suck.
Right.
It doesn't.
Howard the Duck is a very idiosyncratic character, and when we're talking about this, like, I've read some of the Steve Gerber original stuff with their satiric bent.
Yeah, as have I.
Yeah.
And it's fun, but there was something about sort of the writing style of the time where, like, fine-tuning comedy hadn't quite happened yet in the
series. Yeah, everything could be a little archer or campy or whatever, but it was never funny.
It's rare that you would be, like, laugh-out-loud funny or, like, wow, that was amazing timing.
And to cut to the lead, this does not suck. It is, in fact, my favorite read of this week, maybe my favorite read of the year so far. I loved this issue. I was cracking up reading it. It's basically Howard is a private detective. He's not particularly good at his job, like all private detectives in comics. he is working out of the office of She-Hulk, which, as we saw in the final issue of She-Hulk, he wanders in.
Yep, nice little tie in there.
This actually feels like She-Hulk number 13 in some ways. It's got that sort of man on the street, working stiff in a superhero world kind of thing. It's really funny.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't sure how much it was going to be really set in the Marvel Universe, and it...
Oh, although, it very much is.
Although it's a little heightened, almost not quite the way John Byrne She-Hulk was back in the day.
No, because it's not fourth wall breaking.
Right, but a little bit, that was still like, you know, she kind of ran into absurd villains and stuff in that. But it is the Marvel Universe. Like, he's interacts with Spider-Man.
Yep, Spider-Man, Black Cat.
Black Cat, She-Hulk, and her... was it her clerk? I can't remember her.
Her assistant, her super monkey.
Yep.
Monkey. There's also a great guest star on the last page. I won't give away. it's just really fun. There's just it laugh out loud. There is a montage. There's a musical montage, which involves I believe involves Dungeons and Dragons playing or possibly miniature painting.
There's also an amazing She-Hulk song.
Yes,
Sort of
She-Hulk is singing to herself. Yeah.
Yes.
I got a laugh out of every page. I liked the characters, and then it sort of goes in a different direction I wasn't expecting. So, I very much love this first issue. I recommend it to everyone. It is a great first issue of a comic.
I think particularly it is very surprisingly approachable for something so
bizarre. Oh yeah, you don't need to know Howard the Duck. You don't even need to know who he was in the Guardians movie.
I will say that if you were intrigued by that or just wondering what's the deal,
this is a
fun way to find out what the deal is.
Yep.
I mean, Siddarsky just sells it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He just does some great work here. And I think Joe Keane is that this is some of, or however you say his last name. Has done some really phenomenal work as well. His storytelling is very good.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just very clean.
I came across this scene where he runs into Spider-Man, and Spider-Man broke out something that was like an old Spider-Man riff that I've remember from the 80s, where he had that on his belt. He had a little searchlight sort of thing he could turn on that projected a little sort of Spider-Man face searchlight, and he shines it on Howard. And Howard is like, wait, what is that? And Spider-Man's like, it's my face. My face is on your body. there's just some hilarious dialogue. Howard the Duck's bad texting in this. His movie ad to promote his detective agency.
Yeah.
There's lots of fun bits.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. Okay, so also this week, there is a new dollar first issue from Oni Press called Hellbreak. That is about a special ops team that goes in and recovers souls from hell who have been unfairly consigned by demons possessing the bodies.
That's interesting.
That's a cool
and
concept.
It's a great first issue. And for a buck, you really can't go wrong. I like the art a lot. It's by the writer of Six Gun. It's probably my favorite thing he's done besides Six Gun. I really like that. New issue of Ant-Man starring Taskmaster, which if you know your Ant-Man history, which probably you don't because most people don't, that nods back to one of the best Ant-Man covers of all time, where he and
Hawkeye and Ant-Man team up. Somebody's going to pick.
Yep, and that's a lot of fun. Spider-Man 2099, which involves the Doctor Strange of 2099 and more of the Maestro. Spear Iron Man number 6, which was a great issue, and is starting to sort of delve more into both Evil Tony's big plans and what exactly Pepper is getting up to.
Evil Tony.
And I'm really loving Spear Iron Man. I'm can't wait to see where they go with this. I'm sure that they're gonna sort of wrap this up before Secret Wars. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that story goes. Amazing Spider-Man is back after Spider-Verse. Number 16 launches back into sort of Parker Industries stuff and some of the stuff that was going on before that. Miss Marvel number 13 is a jumping on point. They've gotten past the big initial story and the Loki one shot that just happened, and it's got guest art by Takeshi Miyazawa, who did some of the Runaways guest art, who is just a phenomenal artist, and I love the art in this book.
I mean, my favorite stuff he's done is the Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sort of where I first came to see Takeshi Miyazawa.
And it is amazing. It continues to be a perfect blend of sort of a, what it's like to be a Muslim teenager with what it's like to be a young superhero with some of the Inhuman stuff. There's a lot going on in that book that's really fun. I really loved it. Bill and Ted's Most Triumphant Return, number one from Boom. If you like the Bill and Ted movies, you probably, like me, were a little nervous about continuing them. They got it pretty well in Boom, actually, I gotta say. It picks up right after the end of the second movie and goes on and is just funny and fun. And
Randy, do you recall that there was, I guess in the 90s, that Evan Dorkin did the Bill and Ted comics?
I have that collection, yeah. Yeah. And then finally, Shaft, number four, which I've been really liking the series. The crime series Shaft, which is sort of the Shaftier one. Nick, what else is on your list?
The second issue of Spider-Gwen.
That was so good.
It was quite good. Just, if you like the first one, you'll love this one.
Yeah, so much cool stuff going on in that.
Yeah. The first issue of the tie-in to the new video game Batman Arkham Knight.
Is this a prequel?
It is a prequel. Okay. It basically takes up right after the ending of Batman Arkham City.
Okay.
So right from where that ends, this is where it picks up.
Okay.
So it's pretty good. I mean, it's kind of like those games, a little bit darker, but some interesting notions, and we get our first glimpse at sort of Arkham Knight, the yeah. character.
I see that Peter Tomasi is writing it.
Yeah, Peter Tomasi and... I forget the artist.
That's a bigger name than you tend to get on these.
Yeah, yeah. That's the guy who's been doing Batman and Robin for the longest time.
So I think that's sort of what made it. And Viktor Bogdanovich does the artwork.
Okay.
So very kind of Capullo-esque in a lot of ways.
Yep.
Yeah, I was looking through that earlier, and I was like, that's a Capullo clone.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in a bad way.
Yeah.
And a nice cover by Dan Panosian.
Oh, yep. Some might say that Capullo's been a fairly successful Batman artist, so I guess it makes sense to put a guy like that on Batman. Yeah.
The second issue of Star Wars, or the third issue of Star Wars,
sorry. Yep.
Very cool stuff going on.
How long have they been working on Star Wars to have John Cassaday put out three bi-weekly issues?
How long has this been? Even for his work, it seems detailed.
It's gorgeous. They must have been working on this for 2 years.
Yep. There's no way he stays on longer than six issues, right?
No way. I bet this book has been done for like a year and a half.
Maybe so.
I have a feeling so. I mean, this is it's actually, the story is sort of a, because it's set between movies we've already seen.
It's timeless.
He didn't need to know like what was going to happen in the new movie or anything.
But man, it's good. There's some great action sequences again, some good Darth Vader stuff. Yeah.
The sixth issue of Thor.
The cover asks the question, who is Thor? Is that answered in this issue?
It is not, but we're coming up on that eventually.
We're getting there.
But this is actually a very touching issue with sort of Thor talking with Jane Foster.
And oh, okay.
She's actually going through some pretty hard times in her life, and it was just sort of seeing them reconnect was very, very interesting.
It's weird. It's like I'm trying to figure quite how you pull that off when you still don't quite know who the main character is.
Well, this is all about the male Thor's trying to figure out who it is. That's what this issue is about.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know, this really is cement, this all new Thor has cemented that Jason Aaron excels at writing Thor.
You think he's going to become like one of the, will be remembered as one of the great Thor
run
guys?
I think so, actually. I think this is some really, really
like
great
Simonson,
stuff.
JMS, yeah. Baby Dan, this is Jurgens.
I don't know if anybody can reach the levels that Simonson did. There's just no way.
It's a bar to clear, yeah.
But JMS, I think this is definitely on par with
okay,
it.
Okay, cool.
What else? Oh, the 18th issue of East of West. I can't wait to read. There's not only an Amazing Spider-Man this week that Randy already talked about, there's also Amazing Spider-Man Special that sees sort of Spider-Man, I think, team up or move into the Inhumans area, so deal with some of them.
And is this the one that ties, does it tie into the Nova special that comes out this week?
It does indeed.
They've been doing these little these specials that are sort of like old annuals. It's three-part stories, and so like Amazing Spider-Man special, Nova special, and I don't know who the other character is.
Yeah, I can't remember who the other
but
one is.
But the Nova special and Amazing are this week, and the next one will be like next week, the week after, but it's like a three-part story, collects all these, puts
it
all these favorite...
It's the Inhuman special.
Oh, the Inhuman special. So it puts a bunch of these characters together who maybe aren't together in the regular Marvel Universe and does a sort of a team-up special, which is cool.
And the final thing on my list is the second issue of Matt Fraction and Fabio Moon's Casanova Assedia, which I've loved so far, so I have no doubt I'll love this issue just as much.
Dave, what else is on your stack?
I think y'all covered most of the big ones, but there's a few other oddballs in here. There's a new Mouse Guard Legends of the Guard miniseries coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I sort of fell off of Mouse Guard. I was weirdly... for something with such a cute, kind of cool concept, little mice warriors.
Yeah,
it's always been a little too dour for me.
Yeah,
like a little too damn serious. Where's the fun mice? No, a little bit more, a little more of that Secret of Nim pop.
Yeah,
I want.
Yeah,
but the art is so cool, and I still do like the idea that I thought I'm gonna look in on it again and just try these random stories.
I'm thinking this is sort of a jam issue, isn't it, with different creators?
It's been that way on all of the Legend.
But
yeah.
I see like Scotty Young is involved.
Yeah,
in this,
and that's
one.
I guess that's sort of one of the notable ones. Scotty Young is in there. I mean, they're all good. I don't know who Hannah Christensen is. Let's see. Well, I know who Mark Buckingham is.
Yeah, from Fables.
Yeah, he's doing one, but like all the art is very superior. You know, these are pretty amazing fantasy artists. I see there's a cool map in here. There's some stuffed mice you can buy.
Dave's gonna read the ads now.
There's a barcode on the back. Gee whiz. Let's see, there's the third issue of the rather late Jeff Smith book, Tuki, his caveman comic, which
is
I've been enjoying.
Is it late, or was this pretty much expected?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's late by normal human standards,
yeah.
But by artiste standards.
Yeah, but by Jeff Smith standards, how many issues is that in?
He's probably going to say, he's like, I couldn't hear you over the counting all my money from all the Bone volumes. Yeah. He's like, once it's all out, nobody will care.
Yep.
And there's some truth to that, but yeah, I wish it was coming out a little faster. Let's see. Astro City 21 would have been my probably runner-up pick of the week. It concludes the story arc that's been focusing on Quarrel, their sort of archer lady, and Crackerjack, the hero who has been around since the third issue of the series back in the early 90s,
yep.
And has been dealing with him kind of getting older and losing, you know, kind of falling out of step with sort of the modern world. And this is the big dramatic conclusion, and big stuff happens in it. It's pretty serious issue.
That does remind me. There's a new Astro City hardcover this week. Private Lives. And a soft cover, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's more collections of private. But I've been reading hardcover, so I'm excited to read another chunk of Astro City. Yeah.
But it's definitely an Astro City week.
Yep.
Single issue and two trades on the shelf.
Yep.
And I think that's it. I think you covered all the others that I've got in here. Yep, that's it.
All right. That'll about wrap up our comics talk for this week. We will be back in just a moment to talk a little bit of TV and a board game. So not as many topics this week as there were last. In fact, I don't know if Dave has much to say on most of these things. Most of me and Nick stuff. But
I'm just going to sit and glare.
He's really good at glaring.
Listeners at home, just picture me glaring.
I did warn you ahead of time I want to talk about this stuff. What, you busy or something?
Well, not the board game. You did mention the show that we want to watch.
So there's a new show on Netflix. It's called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It is a 13-episode series. It was originally an NBC show, developed by Tina Fey and someone else from 30 Rock. It was basically the follow-up to 30 Rock.
Right.
And it stars Ellie Kemper from The Office, as well as the guy who was DeFuan in the 30 Rock Queen of Jordan spinoff.
I completely forgot about that, but yes.
And Carol Kane. Whoever played Jenna. What's her name? Yeah, I'm blanking on her name. Jenna from 30 Rock. Jane Krakowski are the main characters. Also, there's several others, but those are sort of the main characters.
Yeah.
And Ellie Kemper plays Kimmy Schmidt, who in the first 2 minutes of the show is rescued from a bunker where she was kidnapped when she was young and raised along with three other women in this bunker as part of a doomsday cult by the Reverend, what is his name, Gary F. Gary or something like that?
Something like that. It's very long and very humorous.
And the intro sequence is when they're interviewing a black dude living in a trailer who is very enthusiastic in the method of some of these news reports you've seen. And so they're doing this news report as the cops have kicked her out of the bunker. They're bringing her back to real life. And they go to an auto-tune montage of this guy talking about it.
It's
and
like
that's the
fan edit.
And that's the theme song for the show, and it's really catchy.
It is.
But
I'm sure people have seen the fan edit or the auto-tuned news and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that it's spoofing.
This show, Ellie Kemper is – I've always liked her, and she is totally the star of this, and she totally owns it. She's – so basically Kimmy decides to stay in New York and try to make it, even though she doesn't know any pop culture from the last 20 years, and she was raised in a bunker.
Well,
so she's
also got like a grade school level –
Middle school education.
Middle school education.
So I haven't watched this, but it sounds like other than that opening sequence – It sounds like they have created a person who is, I don't want to say a blank slate, but to whom the world is all new, our modern world.
Yeah, it's the stranger in a strange land kind of thing. Yeah.
And honestly, it's a kind of dark subject matter.
It is.
Looked at it in a very sort of humorous light.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because it's through the eyes of Tina Fey and her writing.
Yeah.
I mean,
It is very much of a piece with 30 Rock. It has that same weird vibe. I mean, Jane Krakowski's character is this one percenter who is just so self-involved.
So out of tune with the rest of the world.
Yeah, and she basically hires Kimmy to look after her two extremely spoiled kids. One's a teenager, one's a young boy.
She's
like maybe 8 or 9.
Of the house.
Yeah. And had the guy who plays Dufon is her failed actor roommate. Carol Kane is their crazy landlord.
His one act Lion King.
His one act Lion King is hilarious. There's a lot of fun stuff in this. Ellie Kemper sells it basically by being just sort of relentlessly cheerful and fun.
Yeah. Terminally perky.
Yeah, terminally perky, yes. And it's so fun, and everybody is sort of, there's a sort of weirdness to it that is really engaging.
It is. I've only watched 2 episodes. I know, Randy, you've watched
6 episodes
more,
in. Yeah.
So I don't know how much of a character art we've seen so far with Kimmy.
Yeah.
But I'm hooked. I think it's very, very good.
Yeah.
The writing, of course, I've always liked Tina Fey with Saturday Night Live and also things like Mean Girls.
Yeah.
So this is sort of more of the same from her. It's just great one-liners, great...
It's hilarious.
Yeah. I really can't say anything than that. Just watch it.
It's on Netflix, one of their originals. It was originally going to be an NBC show, and then Netflix bought it. And
I can't believe it.
I'm glad it's on Netflix, because NBC wisely saw it. This was going to die on NBC. It's too weird.
It is weird, but I just don't... I mean, it's going to do gangbusters
for Netflix. But that's because they don't have to worry about ratings and advertising.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? You know what would be the perfect pairing for this? Is Last Man on Earth.
Yeah, completely.
It makes perfect sense. So, but yeah. So, you know, do your own little pairing. Put DVR, Last Man on Earth, watch that, then watch an episode of Kimmy Schmidt, and you got a great comedy block. Since TV's not doing great with comedies right now.
No.
But this one's really fun. Then last night, Nick and I had a board game night with a couple other friends.
Yeah, we did.
And we played for the first time. I'll start with the one we played second.
Okay.
We played the XCOM board game.
We did.
Which has an iPad or iPhone app that you use to sort of time everything.
Yes.
So basically, you have 4 players. It's a cooperative game. You're trying to defend the Earth from alien invasion.
Based on the popular video game series about defending the Earth from alien invasions.
Yep. And each player has a sort of role in the game.
One of them is like the operations expert, one he's a scientist, one he's the commander, and one's the squad leader.
Squad leader, yeah.
And so you're sort of trying to shoot down alien UFOs, keep the world from panicking, keep the aliens from destroying your base, and go on missions to get alien salvage and sort of hopefully eventually destroy the aliens. There's a series of different mission cards. You pick a mission at the beginning. Yeah. And the cool thing about this that I think I might have been the only one who really liked this. It might have been too much pressure for everybody else. But it is a timed thing when you're doing the setup. And it's like 5 to 10 seconds. You're like, okay, whoever the operations expert is running the app. And the app comes up and says, crisis card. And so the commander has to pick 2 crisis cards, choose which one, put it down in like 5 or 10 seconds. And then...
Now, this is not like the persistent game, but it occurs on like every...
Every turn has a setup round and then a resolution round. The resolution round is not timed.
Right.
The setup round is bang, bang, bang. Okay, the scientist has 6 cards and he has to pick which one to put down and which one to put scientists on. The squad leader needs to send out troops to go out to missions and defend the base. Aliens are popping up at the base and UFOs are popping up over the world and all that kind of stuff. And then you resolve by trying to shoot down UFOs, take out the missions, build up your technology so you can use that for other – they're represented by cards that give you other abilities.
Who was the guys who did this?
It's Fantasy Flight.
It's Fantasy Flight. I will commend them because they've basically recreated XCOM, the video game, very, very closely.
Yeah, except it's not. Like you were saying,
it doesn't have the turn-based combat.
Yeah. It's not like playing the game, but it has the same sense of overwhelming odds that the XCOM
game
does.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was saying.
And
it also follows that. That's the management element of the game, which is you in whatever the major versions of XCOM, you have to manage a base, increase your resources, get salvage, get better gear.
Yep, and all of that is in there. It's just It's in a different way. It's basically not a, oh, well, why would I play this when I can just play the video game?
Right.
It is.
Oh, it's a different experience.
It's a different experience, but if you like the video game and you don't mind the pressure tactics of the speed.
It is co-op, right?
It is co-op, yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard.
It's hard. We got our asses kicked. We were also learning the game for the first time.
I don't know if it's that this hard, but it's, for me, it looked like on like pandemic level hard.
A pandemic's not crazy hard.
It's harder than pandemic by quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this game. And the other game we played was Lords of Waterdeep.
Right.
Which is
Dungeons and Dragons.
Which is very much not cooperative.
No, very much adversarial.
Yeah. Where everyone is playing a secret Lord of Waterdeep, and you are trying to recruit four different adventurers, rogues, fighters, mages, and clerics.
So you're like sort of the rival politicians of the city,
yeah,
trying to, what, get a leg up on each other?
Yeah, you're trying to, there's mission cards that you get, and they're in five different, there's like piety missions and commerce missions and all that. And
piety missions?
Piety, yes. Like build a temple to Ogma.
Okay.
Yeah. Or discover a secret shrine of Lolth.
Right. So you want to ingratiate yourself to the various religions of the deity.
And when you complete a card, you get victory points, and it's kind of tracks just like Ticket to Ride.
Yep.
And the adventures are represented by little different color cubes.
Yeah.
And you go to different buildings to recruit them. And then you buy buildings that actually give different abilities. And with whatever building you buy, if someone uses it, you get a little bonus from it. Then there's intrigue cards, which are things
sort of
like...
just like allow you to swap out things or maybe give yourself like things you need, but... hose somebody else, like,
yeah,
make them give you money. And
sounds really cool.
Or in some of them, there's a thing where like you get two adventurers and you give one adventurer to another player.
Right.
So you have to sort of give something else to one of the people who's working against you.
Who makes this game?
This is Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
It is an official D&D game. It's set in the world of Forgotten Realms. It's Waterdeep is their big city.
I mean, there's a lot of pieces to it, but everything is very elegantly designed.
Yeah.
And the box is elegantly designed.
It's like Firefly, where we thought, oh, this is a ton of pieces, but it all fell into place really quickly. Like,
yeah.
I'd put it on the iPad version.
Right.
You'd never played it.
No.
And one of the other guys never played it. And one of the other guys had played it once. And we all fell into it really quickly. Like, nobody ever felt like they didn't know what they were doing.
Right, and I think our game was a little bit different because the buildings didn't really kind of come into play.
We didn't get a lot of really cool buildings, yeah.
Right, just the shuffle was a little harsh, but I just thought it was really fun.
It was really interesting.
And it's one of those ones you could just pick up.
Yep.
I mean, I picked up like the sort of game mechanics in 5 minutes.
It took us maybe an hour, hour and a half total to play the game,
yeah.
So it was not a super long game.
This is going to have to be the next one that's on my definite to-do list.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. It's a game, it reminds me a little bit of Agricola.
Okay, you know, I never played that.
But it doesn't have the complexity of learning, the learning curve that Agricola has. It's like all the complexity of the game. There's a lot of different tactics you can use, but it doesn't have this steep learning curve where the first game is basically all just learning it and nobody's playing.
And it's also cool because at the end, when you're sort of tallying up points with things, your lord gives you bonuses for certain missions you go on.
Yeah, you have a secret lord card that you know but nobody else knows that gives you bonuses for, say... mine was piety and commerce missions.
Was this because you're supposed to be the masked lords of Waterdeep?
Yes, so the masked lords of Waterdeep.
So in other words, people don't know until the end which one you are.
Can
you kind of intuit it sometimes?
You could. Well, like I knew Nick was going for piety quests because he kept getting piety quests.
Right.
And I knew that one of the other guys was going for skullduggery quests.
So you could have potentially used that knowledge and been like done something to try and deny.
You could start sort of stealing all the skullduggery and all that kind of stuff. But it's like any game like this. The more you're focusing, like Ticket to Ride, the more you're focusing on preventing somebody else, the less you're doing your own stuff.
Right.
So
I may have inadvertently kind of hosed a few people.
Oh, you definitely did. Yeah. Yeah. you stole some stuff from one of our guys who needed stuff to finish a mission. He was working on this big giant mission that needed 9 adventurers and 2 rogues, which is a big 25 point big mission.
Yes.
And you kept taking rogues.
Yep. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your description of the mission things definitely reminds me of Ticket to Ride.
Yeah. It's sort of a mix of sort of Ticket to Ride and Agricola, but with a, like I say, a much less steep learning curve.
Agricola to Ride.
Agricola to Ride. So those are the two games we played this week and a show we watched, and that was all the comics this week. We've given you a jam-packed episode again. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. You can always send us questions, send us suggestions for questions for Scenes from a Wednesday, which I'm sure we'll do again soon.
Oh, yeah.
And until next time, Yo, Joe! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com.
Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx.
And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.